Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's been a wild week of weather. Looking up there in the sky, all the things, all at once, a buffet of climate things. But here we are, and it's Friday, ready to talk about the news. So, today on CityCast Las Vegas, I'm here with co-host Vogue Robinson and contributor Andrew Crawley, and we're going to talk about that Badlands litigation saga. Wonder if our politicians are maybe getting too old, and Cardi B's outrageous mic drop. It's Friday, August 4th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Vogue Robinson, Andrew Crawley, welcome to CityCast Las Vegas Friday News Roundup.
Yeehaw.
Hey, hey.
Yeehaw indeed. Golly, the city is ready to spend another $1.5 million litigating the Badlands golf course controversy this year. Andrew, what's going on here?
Yeah, this is going to take some interactive multimedia charts and some PowerPoints to explain because, yeah, it gets labyrinthine, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. On Wednesday, the city council approved spending another $1.5 million to continue fighting this lawsuit and legal battle that the would-be developer of the defunct Badlands golf course has been fighting over for, God, years now. And this adds to almost $6 million that the city has already spent litigating this saga. To kind of give some quick context, this is kind of like the Jarndyce and Jarndyce lawsuit in Bleak House. It's just incredibly complicated and Byzantine. But in 2015, Johann Lowy proposed to develop the defunct, dead Badlands golf course into a residential community with various levels of, you know, density and housing and stuff like that.
For our listeners, where is that even located?
Ah, so this is in the Queens Ridge neighborhood, which is pretty much like off of West Charleston between like Wallapai and Rampart. A nice suburban community, had a beautiful golf course, but Badlands was just, you know, losing money every year, and it finally just, you know, shut down. Mm-hmm. So Johann Lowy and his company EHB, which are the developers of Tivoli, proposed doing a massive redevelopment of the land, 250 acres. Now, the weird, complicated thing is, and your insight into the legal niceties of this might come into play, mm-hmm. David, is that apparently
they're moron. You know, yeah. Legal niceties.
Johann apparently had entitlements to the land, but not necessarily the zoning. So the city ultimately, with pressure from the Queens Ridge neighborhood who were against developing this this golf course, the city rejected his redevelopment proposal and he sued them in 2015. And since then, he's won multiple judgments in this saga and the city's on the hook for I'm doing the math. It's like $100, $150 million when you add some of these judgments up. So should the city go back into the fray and spend more money on, you know, litigating this to, you know, maybe save themselves, $100 million? So they voted to do it. Victoria Seaman, city councilwoman who's also running for mayor, was against the idea, and she has been clamoring to settle this case once and for all. So pretty wild. And when, you know, Victoria Seaman is the voice of reason, we're living in topsy-turvy land.
This is a bunch of rich people fighting over how many houses should be built on a janky golf course in a richy-rich neighborhood. It has cost the taxpayers tons of money because there have been politicians who have tried to block it. There have been lawsuits, some ridiculous and frivolous, accusing city council members of anti-Semitism and whatnot, including our friend Bob Coffin, which didn't go anywhere. But there have been plenty of victories. And now, yeah, you're right, Andrew. This is, you know, gone to nine figures that the city will have to pay a private, already very wealthy developer for their shenanigans that the court has said happened. And Victoria Seaman, like most politicians in that area, and that is her ward, you know, pick sides. And she's running for mayor. And who even knows? But she has consistently voted against spending more money on litigation and just wanting to lay down. But at the, you know, at the 19th hole, somebody's going to get really rich off of the public coffers. And it ain't anyone in this conversation. All right, Vogue, what do you think of this whole mess?
It's a mess. I don't even understand why people don't want housing to go right there.
It's how many houses. The real Richie Riches who were there wanted to be limited development. The developer wanted to put as many houses as he could possibly put on that parcel so he can make even more money.
Right.
And so that was what the fight seemed at its core to be about when you get away from all the, is this a proper land development? Were there the right like ordinances or zoning or any of that stuff.
So just a big ass space of green that is, unutilized and, you know, low key a wasted space. So, I mean, if they don't transform it into a park at some point, I hope they come up with some kind of solution because this is stupid. And I'm like millions, like I'm looking at it. The number of times that judges have ruled against the city just shows that they're not going to win. That clearly there's, you know, there's space for this developer to be able to build something else there. Good luck.
I mean, do you think a developer in the interest of the city in which he lives and thrives and profits should just like say, look, I'm right. I want an apology. I'll take some money, but I don't need to bankrupt the city over this one stupid golf course project. Is that an unreasonable thing to expect of a human being in our community?
If you're asking like whether a super rich developer can act humanely and reasonably, yeah, that's a bit of a high bar.
I think the reason why it's gone on so long is because you're dealing with two groups of folks who have an inflated sense of entitlement. So it feels like on one end, you know, that the city council is like, well, you know, we said no and no means no, you're not allowed to do this. And the developer is like, actually, I can. And the judge, it seems like the law is on the developer's
side. Actually, numerous judges.
Numerous judges are on his side. And so I don't think it's on him to step down. It's on the city council to make some decisions and some concessions because they're fighting a losing battle that's just spilling out all of the money, all of the sand, all of the things across the valley.
Money that could go for social services, education, homelessness, all that stuff, education, whatever the city spends its money on wisely would now go into one person's hands. There was a settlement, right? But what you said, there was a settlement that fell apart, Andrew?
So there was a settlement deal put together last year, and the total price tag would have been $64 million. And it kind of gets arcane, but the deal apparently fell apart because Johan Lowy accused the city of like changing the terms of the deal at the last second.
Probably did.
So there's a lot of, you know, sort of impregnable bad faith, I think, that's at the core of this that suggests to me that neither side is going to back down anytime soon. And I'll give credit to Victoria Seaman. I mean, it seems to me that she's been consistent in saying, we just need to settle this thing calmly and reasonably and for some kind of price. And I mean, and if it comes to $50 million, I think they'll be getting a pretty sweet friends and family discount at this point because the numbers that are coming out of these judgments are, pretty shockingly high.
Right. The 2021, it was $34 million. And then And the next award was $48 million. And then one of the attorneys who represents Lowy said last year the third ruling could cost the city upwards of $50 million. He can move and build something somewhere else with the amount of money he's just getting in settlements. And do we need more housing, really? I understand, you know, real estate is a lucrative investment, but do we really need more housing?
These were not going to be affordable houses,
exactly. Like, do we need more of this kind of housing in that area? You know, I'm sure it would build up a lot for what Tivoli needs to be able to continue existing. So
I mean, wouldn't that be the ultimate revenge, right? If he actually comes to some terms of some development density, and then he like busts out some affordable housing right on the doorstep of Summerlin. Aww, shock and awe.
That would be so nice.
I mean, hey, does Vegas even need more fancy houses around a golf course like this? I mean, what else could be on that 250-acre site apart from our, you know, dream utopia of affordable housing for all?
I feel like the utopia is the best possible answer to that question.
I really thought you were going to say water park.
No.
Bring back, you know, God, a super wet and wild with Der Stuka.
No.
Or maybe just like wet and mild, the safe and sane version of wet and wild, right? No.
So you're voting for utopia, Vogue?
Yeah. My vote is for the utopia. What do you need?
More casinos, obviously. It's Las Vegas. Maybe a Super Dottie's.
I hate you so much right now.
Andrew, what do you think?
I'm getting nightmarish Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man Dottie's monster visions in my mind. Thank you for planting that, David.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, so many options, right? I mean, one of the sort of like sensible things to do if we're sort of dreaming responsibly would be to convert, you know, the golf course into a eco-minded, you know, public park, maybe something a la, you know, the Springs Preserve, you know? I mean, that's 250 acres is, you know, not a small plot of land.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be done with it.
There is existing housing on there. And I'm just wondering if we just, again, kick out the Richie Riches and give it to a bunch of teachers.
Kick out.
Oh, I'm such a socialist today. What's going on?
I love that you're unhousing people in order to make your dream happen, David.
I think
I'm
they'll
concerned.
Land on their feet. Yeah.
Unhousing for the ultimate good.
You can't kick people out of their homes in the name of affordable housing.
No, obviously. But, you know, I've sat through a number of these city council meetings, and the privilege is strong with these folks. I mean, they do take up a lot of time of government business. I'm not the hater on capitalism that I think that I present myself to be. I want people to have nice houses and live in quiet harmony. But this Badlands is just bad blood.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
All right. Speaking of elected officials who have made some horrible decisions that have impacted us.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
There's a new discussion that probably hasn't been held with such fervor in the United States in over 60 years. And we're kind of talking about the maximum age for people to be in office. I know you all have heard about some of the discussions around people like Senator Feinstein and Senator McConnell. I mean, Feinstein's 90, McConnell's in his 80s. Mm. They both have had very public incidences recently where people are talking about their age possibly being a disqualifier. Of course, both President Biden and former President Donald Trump are not young people any longer. We've also got some older politicians in our state, too, though we should be clear, none seem to have exhibited, at least in public, any of the symptoms that we've talked about so far, like freezing up in front of a mic or forgetting to say aye to your own vote. Mm. The question sort of comes up again, and I say not since 60 years, because that's when the famous counterculture conversation from don't trust anyone over 30 started, right? So let's talk about Clark County. I mean, we've got some folks here that are up in age. And most notably, we've got Mayor Carolyn Goodman. She's aged 84.
Really?
She's 84?
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Continue.
She must moisturize.
We've got the chair of the county commission, Jim Gibson, is 75. The co-chair, Tick Siegerbloom, 74. Dina Titus, our representative from the South here in Congress, is 73. There's a representative in the state legislature, John Hambrick, he's 74. We have a Supreme Court Justice, Chris Pickering, she's 70. District Court judges, Mark Denton is 71. There are others. You know, we talk in this country a lot about people getting to a certain age. I'm thinking of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and others who really are in the center of this conversation. Y'all, I don't want to be the ageist person. I'm the oldest person on this podcast right now.
Yeah, you're 79?
But I am. emotionally, 15. Physically.
There you go. And you take like the average of those two.
79, and you average it out, and that's actually my bio date.
Oh,
but
God.
Should there be age limits on holding public office? That's provocative, but it's part of this national conversation.
Yeah. I never thought I would be intrigued by that idea, but yeah, reading some of these news stories makes it sound like an intriguing notion. And, you know, I never thought we would be talking about basically like your fundamental cognitive fitness to, you know, do the job of being an elected public official. So I would say I'm definitely interested in having the, you know, the conversation, and it doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable, you know, question to ask. So what do you think, Vogue?
It's unreasonable. I think that it's deeply ageist, and I think that there's, you know, if we're talking about someone's cognitive abilities, then have them take, you know, tests and go through, you know, checking on, I mean, I feel like they make certain elected officials, depending on where you're at, you make enough money and get good enough health care to be able to get tested by excellent doctors mm-hmm. to see how's your brain, how's your mind, how's your heart? Because there are people who are much younger who are not in good health, and also like different diseases can affect the brain regardless of age. So it's not about the age. It's how's your brain? How is your overall health and capacity to function? I think that's the question. And so obviously, you know, what we witnessed was, you know, I don't know what happened. I don't have enough information about the freeze, as of now it's now titled. But overall, it's, you know, it's really a concern for health. And are you able to do your job? Mm-hmm. And there's ways to make things accessible as well. So, you know, there are people I'm still teaching how to use computers, and, you know, there are certain jobs you can't get without filling out an application online. And so those things are barriers for people. But I think that we need to be focusing on accessibility in some of these spaces, and then also being realistic about if you're so foggy, or if you, you know, if you have certain amounts of like Alzheimer's coming onto your mind, then yeah, at a certain point you're at a decline, and you may not be in a good enough shape to do your job to the best of your ability.
Let's flip that script, though. There are age limits on the minimum side.
Right.
I mean, you can't even be the president unless you're 35. Mm-hmm. You can't be in Congress unless you're 25. Isn't that the same thing, Andrew? If there's bottom qualification that we generalize with an age number, can't we do that on the top, too?
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I'm thinking, too, is like, yes, there is going to be some level of sort of functional ageism, you know, built in. And, you know, these aren't going to be like the sort of, you know, finest of knives that are, you know, making these decisions of what's the minimum age cutoff, what's the maximum age cutoff. So I think you have to accept that, you know, it's not going to be such a sort of swift, you know, easy solution. So yes, it's going to be ageist, but I think you can have these conversations and enact some, you know, some filters in a way that's, you know, responsible and reasonable. One thing that's interesting to me is that this conversation seems to be emerging, you know, about the, you know, the gerontocracy that we live under, and it's kind of, it's really emblematic to me about what seems to me like the sort of really radical growing ideological rift between, younger generations and older generations, you know, millennials and boomers. And they fundamentally disagree on, you know, what are the values that we should pursue in our sort of, you know, public policy and things like that. And I have in mind a recent, you know, study I read that Republicans, which, you know, they tend to be older, they tend to be white. If they had to choose, you know, a good economy over, you know, battling, you know, climate change, they would go with the economy every time. You see that completely flipped whenever you're polling, you know, millennial voters and younger voters. So I think it's an interesting conversation that kind of reveals that tension, this generational tension that to me has never been so pronounced in my lifetime.
Well, Vogue, I mean, you know, you hear very loud and strong voices like Greta Thunberg, you know, the Swedish environmentalist, the activist there, who's like, you know, the older folks in charge are screwing us. They don't have to live with the world that they're leaving behind. We do. They shouldn't be the ones in charge because they have less life in front of them statistically than we do. Is there any credibility to arguments that, you know, people who've just been there forever who don't have a lot at stake because they're not going to be around as long shouldn't be pulling the levers of policy?
Well, I think that has more to do with term limits and voting. Like, I know, you know, 2008, 2009, you know, I remember getting people being like, young people aren't voting. And there were so many campaigns to get young people to vote and whether or not we're allowed, what age you are to be able to be allowed to run for office. So I think it's a, I think my answer is three pronged. I'm going to try to get here. But one,
we're hashing out a policy here. I love it.
But I think, like, one, it's, I think younger people should be allowed to run for office. Because if 18 means you're young enough to die for this country, then you should be able to do everything else for and about this country. So that's one.
Including president. You're ready for the 18-year-old president. You're ready for some pop singer. You're ready for Taylor Swift, although she's not 18.
If Donald Trump can be president of this entire
country. I'm ready for TikTok president.
If Donald Trump can be president, then I think with the proper, like, counsel and a great team behind you, yeah, let's see what an 18-year-old will do. How are we currently doing? Are you happy with leadership? So that, one. Two, my second prong, I think that we should be looking at term limits for some of these positions. Supreme Court judges, for example. So what are these terms and how come you get to be on there until you die? No, that probably doesn't make any sense, especially considering, you know, through the 60s, what laws were in place and what I would have been allowed or not allowed to do as a Black person, as a woman. So two, term limits. And then I forgot my third one because I'm so pissed off now. Thanks, David.
Well, sure. But here's the thing. Here's the argument against term limits is that you lose experience. And people who have all this experience aren't going to be in there. And who fills that gap? Lobbyists for private entities.
So they stay there as mentors. That you build a system that requires an intergenerational conversation. And so, like, okay, if your term is done, that doesn't mean, okay, you just leave and live on a farm somewhere and nobody ever hears from you. You're somewhere building houses, Habitat for Humanity houses. You stay and you are the counsel to that person.
Are you dissing Jimmy Carter? He should have stayed in the conversation and not just go and help
people? I love Habitat for Humanity. I'm
sold out with that Habitat for Humanity.
And I think you should definitely be allowed to rest. He deserves some rest too. But I'm saying when we retire people, and they finish their service and then they get sent out to pasture and nobody asks questions about what they're doing and how they're doing, then we're throwing away knowledge when they could be staying nearby and helping with making sure that we're doing that, that each elected official is able to do the best possible job that they have and people don't keep starting off from scratch, wiping a cabinet clean and being like, we're going to do it entirely different way. Fuck the data. Let's just do whatever we want to do.
I mean, that's interesting, too, because, you know, it's not just elected officials, but it, you know, we are a bureaucracy and, you know, Las Vegas is not immune from that, too. I mean, we've got a director of public works that tweeter and director of the Beverly Theater, Kip Kelly, pointed out had been in that spot for over 40 some years. Now, I'm guessing that when that person was in school learning all the, you know, neat things about car culture, maybe some things have changed in 40 years. Maybe some innovations or some policies are new, and yet you've had one person in charge of, like, all the public works in Southern Nevada for over 40 years, And people wonder, why is traffic so screwed up? Why is development so, like, haphazard? And why are we not a thoughtful community? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not blaming it all on one person, but right. certainly if one person has been in there forever. I mean, look, even as a lawyer, we have to take classes all the time. And,
teachers,
you know, who knows if
forever.
A lot of lawyers would be able to pass the bar 15 years out of law school or 20 years out of law school, and yet we're mm-hmm. all still out there practicing. Even the DMV, you know, has certain age requirements that you start taking more tests and they look at you a lot closer. When you're 71, you can't renew your license online anymore. You got to do vision tests and all that other mm-hmm. stuff. I mean, are we missing the boat here? Let me just throw out this question. Is it ageist to talk about people's advanced age when they're running for office?
No, I don't think it's inherently ageist at all. I think the specter of ageism looms whenever you start, you know, introducing conversations that may suggest that, you know, groups as a whole are a certain way. And so I think I like what Vogue said about, you know, being sort of specific and functional and, you know, talking about your specific abilities. So to take your DMV example, I mean, they're not just checking what age you are. They're just saying, you know, we're going to check your eyesight. We're going to, you know, check your, you know, your reaction time. We're going to, you know, check your general awareness and your fitness to drive. That seems to me to be, you know, pretty reasonable. Is it, you know, ageist? No, but it, you know, when you have attitudes that accrete around these kind of things, you know, that's where the ageism occurs. And
I think the question is inherently ageist, Andrew. I think if age is your only question instead of qualifications and like mental acuity, if the question only comes up because of the age, then it is. So I think you.
Yeah, but you can't deny that.
I think you have to standardize the testing. That's all I'm saying. Because, like, even for me, my vision is fine. But, like, I know I have friends whose vision, like, they're in bifocals now and, like, legally blind without their glasses, and they're in their 20s. So you're not going to test them because they're young?
Let's not forget, we did give a test to former President Donald Trump, what he described as a difficult cognitive test that he said he aced. And then we just kind of moved on. Is it even possible?
No sé.
Man, woman, camera,
chair, whatever, chair. Yeah.
That's all it takes. Yeah, you got the power, baby. Keep that power, baby.
He knows his downs.
All right, well, going from 80-year-olds to a 30-year-old, let's talk about Cardi B. Whenever celebrities come to Vegas, there's always a high potential for chaos. We are seeing a lot of it, and Cardi B is not immune. So what's the latest exploit that our good friend of the pod, Cardi B, is up to? Vogue, you want to take this one?
Sure. Oh, David. Number one is Cardi B, and Cardi B is always with it. She's never been shy about fighting somebody. Like, she is who she is. It's always been very clear. If you hit her, if you talk some mess to her, she will just reach across and hit you. Like, that's part of the fame. Some of it is just because she's very direct. Anywho, she came to town. She was performing at Dre's Beach Club on the Strip on Saturday, July 29th. It has been happening a lot. What's been happening a lot is that audiences have been throwing things at our entertainers. So between dancers, singers, rappers, etc., people have been throwing things on stage, and that's just not here in Vegas. It's all over the place. There was a video of Tyler, the Creator, being like, I don't want you guys' shit, like, why are you throwing your things onto my stage? I don't want it.
I
have
your
my
beanie
own.
Babies.
I don't
Keep
want
your beanie
stuff.
Babies to yourself.
One woman threw her mother's ashes on
Sweet.
Stage at a Pink concert.
Ew.
The mother fumes, like, came out of the Ziploc bag onto the stage. So that was horrible. In this scenario, Cardi B, the rapper.
Yes, bringing it back to Cardi B.
Yes. Cardi B, the rapper, was performing at Dre's Beach Club on the Strip, and somebody threw, like, not the whole cup, but they just kind of shoved their cup forward to get ice and water or whatever. I don't know what was in the cup onto Cardi's body. As soon as it happened, knee-jerk reaction, Cardi looked through the mic directly into the audience, hit somebody in the face. And so now that microphone is apparently on sale on the internet. And for a total amount right now, fetching as much as 100K on eBay. So if you would like that microphone, I don't know how it's verified that it was
I'm going to actually say shout out to local resident Scott Fisher, mm-hmm. A longtime Las Vegan, who owns that equipment and who retrieved it and who decided to put it up on eBay and donate the proceeds to charity. So,
way to go, Scott there? Fisher. How do we know that's the mic, David?
Trust me. Scott Fisher is a very reputable source. Okay. So,
that's cool. It's going to charity.
He's been in that business for a really long time. It was his mic.
Oh, so he's like
he
the sound
would
guy.
Put it up. If you want to call it that, yes, he was the sound guy. He was the guy whose microphones were being used by Cardi B, for sure. In fact, his backstory on that was that he was just at home, and he got a bunch of text messages and videos, and he's like, oh, my fucking equipment. But then he decided, you know, I can make something out of this, and even TMZ's reported on it, but it's going to charity, not into Scott's pocket. Mm. So good on Scott
Fisher. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I was going to go on some rant about how everything's monetized, but if it's going to charity, I'm pro-monetization.
Work. So this is what we've got going on. So I mean, do y'all think fans are getting too frisky? Do we need to do a better job of protecting entertainers that come to town, or is this just deal with stuff being thrown at you? What do y'all think?
Well, that's a great question, and I think fans don't understand what is happening, because it hasn't always been happening. I mean, I get it. Back in Vegas in the glory days, women purportedly threw their panties at one Mr. Tom Jones.
That's different.
And that was considered to be clever or funny or whatever it was, or maybe they're just trying to get his attention. I know room keys have been thrown on to equally handsome crooners. But what is it with the fans? Why is it just because everyone wants to be famous? Everyone wants to be in the show. Everybody wants to have their viral moment, and it doesn't matter if they're doing good behavior or bad.
Yeah, I feel like that's part of it. I feel like, we're like cave people still thawing out from COVID, lockdown and isolation. So we're still learning to be like social animals again in some way. But to your point, David, I feel like, people are just constantly chasing viral clout. And I mean, there are entire TikTok accounts and YouTube creators whose entire premise is like doing outrageous things in public just to get the views. And they'll put themselves in dangerous, situations where they're confronting people or scaring them or, things like that. And I'm just like, man, the chase for virality definitely takes some strange turns. So I certainly think that's part of it.
Mm. Vogue, why people out of control?
Bro. I have no freaking clue, but I know it costs too much to get to a concert and to get seats that are close enough to actually be in arm shot.
I know, really. I would love to be in throwing distance.
Right. It's way too much money to be spending to be kicked out of the concert. So, I mean, I don't have money to waste like that. Like, if I came to the show and I'm that close, I just want to see the performer. Just want to bask in the glory, scream, sing the song. I don't know why people keep throwing stuff, but I love that Adele cussed at her audience and was like, I dare y'all to throw something at me.
She did. I was there. I saw that. Oh.
So Adele threatened and Cardi just did the action to show you. Y'all can play if you want to.
Yeah. And she fired that thing like a sniper shot.
I mean, it was. It was like a Chinese throwing star.
Yeah.
Is that the right reaction to, fight stupidity with violence? I mean, Cardi B filed a police report against the person who threw some water or whatever it was on her. Should Cardi B be in trouble for hitting someone with a much harder thing than what was thrown at her?
I don't know if the ends justify the means, but I bet you people ain't gonna be throwing stuff at Cardi anymore. That's what I'll say about that.
I think, a performer walking off the stage and punishing the entire audience is
also
weirdly like not unreasonable if, things have reached this point of frustration where this is happening so much that the public kind of maybe needs to learn to like behave in public spaces again.
Like the bus driver situation. I'll pull over this bus. I don't know if you guys ever rode the school bus, but like, oh, y'all want to sit down and be quiet? I'll pull over this bus. So yeah, the performances stop. I mean, that's money. And I feel like I bet you audience members would sue. I bet you there would be people who would be like, oh, the person walked off stage. Well, I paid so much and I'm entitled to a refund because this performer didn't keep performing. I feel like what's going to happen long term is we're going to start seeing, our performers behind plexiglass, or, we're not going to get those seats that are that close anymore. We're not going to have them walk through the center of the aisle. Like, we're not going to get those
beautiful... It's going to be like going to the bank.
And yeah, right. we're not going to get these beautiful interactions with our... Yes, I was just thinking that. I was like, I was going to make the Pope, you know? So it's going to really suck because they have to protect themselves. Like, this is their livelihood. So I think what Bebe Rexha, who's a country singer, a phone, somebody threw their whole phone, hit her in the face. And of course, it's viral and people are laughing. But like long term, you know, she had a black eye and stitches. What are we doing, y'all? What humans?
Well, Andrew, let me ask you this. I mean, you're an old school punk rocker. That was part of the punk rock aesthetic. You know, there would be this interaction. They'd spit on each other. They would throw shit at each other. I mean, is that just what's happening now?
Yeah. Who knows what weird diseases are lurking in my bloodstream after being, you know, spat on and having stuff spilled on me over, you know, years of playing in a unfortunate punk band in the 90s. And I'm going to be like a total hypocrite here, but, you know, it was understood that that was part of the culture, part of the ethos, part of the energy. And there was always a bit of, you know, sort of harmless responsibility about it. So people weren't throwing, there weren't phones back then, but I mean, not, you know, cell phones, but
if they threw a phone, you would feel it because it was the size of, you know, a small car.
Yeah, they weren't throwing like rocks and bricks. When you're talking about a world where like people are sort of like creating their own spectacles constantly for social media, there's a lot more of a, you know, there's a bunch of different reasons to throw things, right? And they're kind of different reasons than, you know, than why things get thrown at a punk show.
You know, guys, this has been just a riveting conversation. Per usual, per Friday News Roundup, Vogue Robinson, Andrew Corrali, thank you so much for joining us today here on CityCast Las Vegas.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And that's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our lead producer is Sonia Cho Swanson, and our producer is Layla Muhammad. Our newsletter editors this week are Scott Dickensheets and Adrian Gonzalez, and our hosts are Vogue Robinson and me, David Figler. Music is by OG Moose and All the Kimonos. We record the show on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, go tell a friend. Also, leave us a review and subscribe to our brilliant morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Take care.
I'm going to go back.
Thanks for the Vogue-splain.
You're welcome. Oh, my God, you guys.
Also, who's Cardi B?
Vogue-pedia.
Sorry.
Hold, please.
If you don't know Cardi B, you cannot hold public office.
Oh, wow.
There you go. There's our test. We could all agree on that.